Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, football playing their first of two straight on the road. We'll look back on the matchup against Texas State and look ahead to this week's contest at Southern Miss. Also, the men's basketball preseason poll is out. Just how high are the Red Wolves picked? Another great weekend for the volleyball team. Also soccer, bowling, tennis, golf in action. But we're going to start with our very special guest who in just over a week from now is going into the A-State Hall of Honor, Red Wolves great. It's J.D. McKissick. How you doing, J.D.?
I'm doing well, man. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. So I want to start off with this. How did you get the news that you were going into the Hall of Honor, and what was your reaction when you heard?
First off, I'm a little upset already. don't you get the call once you turn 30 years old?
Well, that's the first time you're eligible is when you're 30.
Okay. Now, all right, I'm 31.
The other thing, in your particular case, they'll make sure they had to make for sure you were through playing, because if not, you're going to be, if somebody called up or if you were still able to play, then you were going to be busy. So they had to make sure you were available.
That's true. I know I'm getting off subject a little bit. I tend to do that a lot. But so I had a teammate at Washington. His name was Jeremy Reeves. And I was telling him, he was like, yeah, they put me in the Hall of Fame at the South Alabama. I'm like, no, they didn't. You only like 20 plus years old. He's like, yes, they did. I'm like, okay. So I was a little pissed with A-State a little bit. But it was great. Taylor Stockamer, Big Stock, hit me up. One of my great teammates. I wouldn't have wanted it no other way, because I think Carlos was in the role before, but to have Stock or Carlos to hit me up like that, man, it was amazing. I was super excited, but at the same time, I was like, it was like a duh. You knew you was going. Once I started telling the fam, like, they like, duh, duh. I'm like, but it was huge to me, because it means a lot. It let me know that everything I did in the past, it don't go unseen. We all talk about leaving a legacy, and that's what I'm actually doing. I left a legacy at A-State, me and the rest of my teammates. And to be the one that's rewarded with this great honor, I'm truly appreciated.
Obviously, most of us are like his family. We're thinking, duh. But let me tell you, and I knew I'd tell this story at some point, so I might as well get out of the way early. It was my good fortune to be involved getting JD back up here at the spring game for Pack Day this past year. And this guy right here, JD McKissick, A-State great, now Hall of Fame member or Hall of Honor member, because his schedule will finally allow it.
Yeah, what should we call it? Hall of Honor?
It's the Hall of Honor, yeah. But this guy, when he came back for the spring game, we knew it was going to be a big deal for him to come back and did an autograph signing. And he said, well, I didn't know anybody here would still know who I was. I was like, are you kidding?
Yeah, it just been so long. I don't remember saying those exact words. Now, look at it, Bobo. I don't remember saying those exact words.
You didn't think anybody would remember you? Like, you're nuts.
I was surprised that it was a good bit of people in the line, especially being, far removed from the game. I wish I could have came up, while I was playing and got a chance to be involved with the team. And, but we had so many coaches changes. It's difficult coming back. And, coming back with a whole new coach that you never played for, but Butch is a pretty cool dude. But, yeah, man, it was difficult. I didn't know it was going to turn out so well, and it was such a short notice. I was appreciative to see how the people in the city of Jonesboro still, showed love and came out. And, yeah, me and Groupie was out there, so we had a good time. It was good to see that. It's always good to feel that love, man, because it ain't going to be here forever.
You go back and you look at all the records, JD, and just the individual stuff. I know you're proud of the team stuff, and we'll get into that, but you are the school's career leader in receptions, receiving yards, also the single season leader in receptions. Is there an individual accomplishment that maybe you're most proud of during your time at A-State?
I will just say my freshman year, just to do what I did after what I went through in high school. A lot of people may not read the bios, but in high school, I only touched the ball like maybe 40 to 50 times. my senior year. And so to just come to A-State and get that red shirt under my belt and watch Framp and Muse and Jabo and Alplin and who else was out there? It was some dogs out there. And just to watch them guys play and R.J. Fleming, Earl, Lil Booby, Lil Frank, just to watch them guys on offense do their thing, it was, you know, I was just so like intrigued and ready to get out there and show what I could do. It's kind of, you know, I get a little emotional when I talk about this. But I would just say my freshman year, man, just to have 103 catches, it was 103, I think, and in like a band. But that was just a me, that was me just getting all the catches behind the line of scrimmage, you know, bubbles. Yeah. Shallows. It was never really me running the deep route. I ran one deep route. I had a couple of deep routes, but a lot of busted coverages because Malzahn was scheming things up so good. But that freshman year, you know, probably what, being 18 years old and get out there and get a chance to really show what I could do. Because coming into A-State, I was just hoping like, damn, I hope I could get like 15 to 18 snaps a game as a true freshman at first. I'm like, but then I started realizing like, Frump don't want to come out of the game. You don't want to come out of the game. So, but my freshman year, man, those 103 catches was crazy because I didn't drop a lot of them. I took advantage of every opportunity that came my way. And I always had the mindset of try to score every time I touched the rock. So in high school, like I said, I didn't get the ball as much, which used to piss me off a lot. But once I got to college, you know, I was trying to score every time I got it. And with Malzahn, whatever signal he would give to Apple and him and Lashley, like, give him the ball again, give him the ball again, I would take advantage of every opportunity. So that freshman year, I was definitely more proud of that, just being so young and coming in and having Stark and App tell me before we go out and play Oregon, hey, JD, don't shit the bed. Don't shit the bed. I'm like, why would y'all say that to me? I ain't even played. But yeah, they would just give me a whole lot of crap. And just to be able to, you know, to perform that way, that meant a lot to me. Even though I felt like I did extremely well throughout the rest of the years, but it was nothing like that.
That 103 catch season came in 2012, Coach Malzahn's year. But not a lot of people really remember that you redshirted in that 2011 season with Coach Freeze. And I remember Coach Freeze, and I was standing right next to him during practice one day, and he said, I've got to fight myself every single week not to take the redshirt off that kid. He had that temptation every week. He saw what you were doing in practice.
And Siskey too. Yeah, Siskey would say it all the time too.
Was that a good thing, the red shirt though?
Yeah, most definitely. But I was so raw, man, and just being able to come from, you know, a high school that was signaling the formations, and then I had to flip my mind and see some new signals again. And I wasn't doing it as good as I would have liked. But like you said, man, it turned out well for me. Just because I had so many good players already there. Well, you know, Frump was the guy. He was his senior year. So who wants to really come out of the game their senior year? And I ain't have time for that. But just practicing every day, that was my time to really show. Because you got to step on the scene. You got to show people who you are. You know, and I was 17. A lot of people don't know. I was 17 when I first got to A-State. And Coach Freeze had to pull me off the field the first day of camp. Because he was like, oh, man, JD got it. His parents got to sign something. And I had to run back in and send it to my dad. He was working at Legacy at the time. It was very important that I redshirted that year. It was actually my decision. And it was just something, if they were going to ask me, I would have told them I'd rather the redshirt anyway.
Now, you know now. If Coach Freeze had his crystal ball and knew he was one and done, you ain't getting no red shirt.
And it was so crazy. I had talked with Siskey. He was actually picking me up because I used to walk everywhere around Jonesboro. He caught me walking down by the basketball arena. It was after one of those pep rallies. And he was driving me in the car. He was like, hey, listen, next year you're going to be the starter. Don't worry about anything. You know, you're going to be the guy. And so ever since then, man, I was working extremely hard to get better for that year with Malzahn. And also just getting better during my true freshman year. Like, we would have scrimmages and everybody would be on the sidelines saying, give JD the ball, give JD the ball. And this one I had started calling myself Sunbelt McKissick. I put the Sunbelt in front of my name just because I felt like one day I'd be one of the best players in the Sunbelt. And, you know, I was on a team with a lot of guys like DeMario. They never once told me, shut up, you ain't this. They pushed it. Hey, Sunbelt, let go, Sunbelt, Sunbelt. And, bro, I used to make some of the crazy. I wish I could get some of that film. I was making some of the craziest plays as a true freshman out there. They would put me in Wildcat, but it was just the plays. It was too hard to remember, man. I felt like it was a real good decision, but we had a deep room. I'm happy Freeze decided to redshirt me as well, though.
When you go back, though, including that 2011 season where you didn't play. You had four head coaches in your five seasons at A-State, three conference titles in those 4 years that you played. So I know we've talked about that period in history a lot over the years, but from your perspective, with all that change, how did this program continue to win? How did you consistently win with everything that was going on?
Who was the athletic director before Terry?
Well, that was Dr. Lee, Dean Lee.
And Dr. Lee was the Malzahn hiring, or was it Terry?
It was Dr. Lee, yep.
Dr. Lee hired Coach Malzahn.
So first off, you gotta give those guys credit. It starts from the third floor, as we would say in the NFL, it starts from the third floor. And then it comes down to the coaches. We had some pretty good coaches, and then it comes down to who they recruited. So with Freeze had an awesome class that he recruited, but I feel like before us, well, that was Roberts, if I'm not mistaken. But Then you had Freeze, which we were Freeze class. And he just put together a real good group of young men, man. And before that, the other coaches before him did a hell of a job in just bringing in those great coaches that knew how to push us. And we were a good unit. Like, they were actually installing the selfless in us. Like, I know I'm kind of skipping, but Shadid, he was a guy that was banging in my head, like, you got to do more than just get in the ball. You got to block for your teammates. You got to be happy for them dudes. And that's something that kind of helped me, which helps me in the NFL also. But that wasn't just in me. That wasn't all of those dudes. Everybody wanted to see everybody do good. And everybody wanted a ring too. You know, we wanted a ring. Yeah, man, just credit to the coaches, to the AD, Lee, to Terry Mahaja. He was amazing. To the new guy they have now, to Freeze, to Anderson, to Malzahn, to Harsin. We was lucky enough to be that hot spot. You know, it was one point in time, we were one of the hottest spots in the country. And all they had to do was recruit and let us just do what we do. You know, I know I'm giving the coaches credit too, but us as players, man, we would find ways and we was getting shit done. So, you know, we had some really good players out there and they would come in and recruit some really good dudes. And, you know, a story that no one really knows about, we had Bo Cinema. But Bo was a little hothead, but we had that same background. And this the type of stuff that keeps the team pretty good, you know. And Trez had that same background. And Trez was a leader that really didn't get a lot of credit. But one day him and Bo, he was like, Bo, if you want to leave, leave. I think I was injured or something. And I was like, hold up, no hell, he ain't going nowhere. He gonna stay right here because he gonna help us win games. And that's the type of camaraderie that we had. You know, we could argue with one another and then we would find out how to kill people between the lines.
All right, this is pretty random, but before we get way away from it, because we mentioned that the 103 catches and you mentioned the little screen and stuff, a lot of that's that jet sweep. So if JD McKissick was in charge of the rules, does a jet sweep go down as receiving yards or rushing yards?
You know, they got the different ones, though. They got the tosses, and they got the, you know, you can actually hand it off, too.
Well, App didn't mind it. Applin was getting credit
for completed passes. Yeah, you gave App a lot of passing yards.
Well, see, Rocky was really the jet sweep guy. I was the jet sweep guy after my red shirt freshman year. I love the way I got it. The bubble should be considered as a pass, but the jet sweep, if he's tossing it, it's a damn handoff. It's a carry. Yeah, it's a carry for sure. So, but I know the QBs probably love it, especially when you got a guy that's great after, you know, once he get the ball and get in the space, great things like Lil Rocky was. But it should be a carry, though. But as a receiver, I would want to go to my receiving yards.
One thing I've always kind of been curious about is in 2014, it was the 100th year of A-State football, and we named the All-Centennial team. You were still playing. I mean, it was your junior year, your redshirt junior season, and you were part of the All-Centennial team. So how humbling was that as a current player to receive that honor?
It's so crazy to look at it today. That's huge, you know, because you're still an active player and you've been, you know, you're getting that notoriety. That is a huge thing to be a part of. But, bro, I ain't going to lie, man, I really just was a baller. Like, I was just focused on ball. I didn't really get too caught up in the accolades and all of that type of stuff. But to be a part of that, you know, that just showed how much Arkansas State respected me, for one. And it also just showed that, you know, I was a pretty good player, you know, at the time. So, you know, it means a lot. But I don't let it get to my head, well, while I was playing, but to just think back on it now that, you know, I was a bad man.
All right. There's something written down on our sheet here, but I'm not going to tell you that. I'm going to say, you tell me the best play J.D. McKissick made in college.
I can only give you one. I mean, because a lot of plays, like playing in the league, you kind of start to fall in love with the basic stuff. We played Georgia State once at home. I think it was my junior year. Well, no, it was redshirt sophomore year. That was the year when I was like talking mean trash to people on the field. And they came back and they had to do an onside kick, and I caught the onside kick and I told them to go home. That was a pretty good play of mine that I love. It was an important special teams play. You know, they get the ball back with the receiver they had. They had the kid Wilson, Albert Wilson.
Yeah,
he was going cuckoo. So that was a big play. But I would just say my dive, man, that Memphis game.
Yeah.
That Memphis game, just that Harsin year was so hard, because it was just so hard for them to find ways to get me the ball. And, you know, I wanted the redshirt freshman year was all about the bubbles, and the, you know, Malzahn was all about the quick game, but Malzahn was getting me the rock. And the Harsin year, we was trying to do too much and I just couldn't really get the touches. So I had to show them that, like, hey, I'm willing to go up there, you know, for this win. So, and they threw me the ball, and I was like, shit, I ain't finna run through this guy, and he finna lay it on me on the sideline, so I'm just gonna jump over his head. And I didn't know I could do that until I did it, and I did it in the league also. So I would say that play for sure.
Did you realize you were still at like the 5-yard line when you started your jump there?
Yeah, I knew it was gonna be a dive. To say that I knew that it's possible that I could jump from here and make it to the end zone with the speed that I was going. And if I get high enough, I could damn near get to the back of the end zone. And I was mad anyway, because I wanted the ball. So I wouldn't be surprised if I jumped into them stadium.
Now it's coming back to me now. Didn't you have one where you dove for wasn't it like a game-winning touchdown a couple of years ago?
Against the Falcons,
yeah. And you took off early on that one too, didn't you?
Yeah, and that's one with, I'm talking about some of the worst ankle injuries you could ever ask for. Dude, I played so hurt in the NFL. But yeah, man, that was a game at home. I knew that I could make plays against them dudes. I played with them dudes, and I also wanted some get back, because I played against them when I was with the Seattle Seahawks, and they was getting after me. And I really had started becoming the player that I knew I could be in the league, because I had to get used to the running back stuff. In Seattle, I really wasn't used to the running back. It comes natural, but it's a different game when you talk about running between the tackles and putting your foot in the ground. You got Bobby Wagner right there waiting for you, and I'm 200 pounds, so that's a bit different. But you know, that game meant a lot for me, you know, be back home and to be released from that team as a rookie. And I just wanted to show them guys, you know, what I was capable of. And that's just that dog, that anger, and that, you know, I want to show y'all that y'all can give me the ball a lot more. So I had to like literally take off and make greatness, because if I get stopped at the one, I'm coming out.
So listen,
coming out and AG coming in, because he's 230.
I want people to listen to what they just heard, and you can bring your kids in if you got kids that are players and let them hear this. Because earlier on, JD was talking about red shirt, and then he mentioned, you know, we had some dogs, and he rattled off, you know, those names, Applin, Stock, Framp, and those guys. He said, we had some dogs. Well, and then all of a sudden, you may hear somebody talking about, you know, coaches want some guys that have some dog in them. Well, if you don't know what that means, I'm going to explain it to you. Because J.D. McKissic has all the records going in the Hall of Honor. He could have gone straight to the Memphis play or any other number of plays, 103 catches as a freshman, all the things. And when I asked him, what's your biggest play at Arkansas State? He said it was recovering an onside kick so he could talk trash and send Georgia State home. And that's what I mean by you want somebody that's got some dog in them.
No, for sure. My uncle used to call me a junkyard dog. It's one thing I don't know how to do is play football timid. You know, as when I was a kid playing Little League, when my dad was out there coaching us, I had a cousin named Cayman Owens, love him to death. But he was in my way. You know, he was on defense and I was on offense, and I was coming through. I was hitting him so hard. And his dad was like, you going to let your cousin hit you like this? That's the only speed I know. So, yeah, man. A dog could come all sorts of ways. Like, for me, I don't like to say I'm from poverty, you know, but, you know, we was poor. I never had my own room until I got to Arkansas State. But that's, you know, that's that, you know, that family bond. You know, you don't know how poor you were till you look back on things. But that made me a dog. You know, that made me the guy who I was, you know, to throw them up, bust them ups out in the neighborhood, the little league games, you know. But yeah, but then you can have someone that's rich, that got everything, and they just as a dog as you. So yeah, it's who you are as a person. It don't matter the background or none of that. It's just what you want to do and what you want your legacy to look like. Because this guy could have $1 million and knock you out, and this guy could have $0 but won't do nothing. So it's all about who you are as a person, what's within you. how you was raised and what you want out of your life.
Seven seasons in the NFL, that's more than double the length of the average NFL career. And you talked about making that adjustment from receiver to running back, but I'm kind of wondering, did what you did at Arkansas State, especially during that Coach Malzahn season, with you running it the way you did that kind of help prepare you for what you ultimately did in the NFL?
And that's the thing, bro. I always been tough as nails, like running. Like Marshawn Lynch, say, I mean, I ain't running through people's face like him, but I would put my pads down and try to run through somebody's face. You know, I wanted to be a running back in high school, but they moved me to receiver. Like, but I always had the running back background. I just never had the actual coaching, the footwork, the alignment, to put your foot in the ground, you know, to fight for the 2-3 extra yards. That's a different world when you talk about receiver and running back, but that definitely helped me out a lot, you know, getting all the short stuff and trying to make something positive out of it, you know, get the team four, as Coach Pascal and Coach Bell and Anderson would say. And after that, the rest is yours. So, but it's a different game. You know, you're not being tackled by, when you're a receiver, you're being tackled by the strong safety, the linebacker, maybe the cornerbacks. But when you're a running back, you're getting tackled by 2-3 guys every time you get tackled. So that's what shortened my career up, if you want to be honest. I've been taking on them dang on linebackers coming through the A-gap and all of that type of stuff. But it definitely prepared me. It prepared me for the next level anyway, regardless of what position. You know, I just had the mindset of, you know, you wasn't going take nothing from me. You wasn't going to deny my access.
Did you get tackled by DeMario in the NFL?
Man, listen, speaking of DeMario, bro, DeMario is a guy that I leaned on my freshman year at Arkansas State. If anybody ever wondered, you know, because when coming out of high school, I was 23. Got to A-State, Siski called me. He was like, you ain't going to get 23, but you can get 20. We're going to get you 24. And my locker mate was 23, which was DeMario Davis. He was a guy that, you know, I could really ball. So he wanted to be a part of that. You know, even if I didn't ball, you know, even if I wasn't as good, I'm sure he would have been giving me advice and that sort of stuff. But he was a guy that, you know, told me who to be around, told me what not to do. I mean, I was well raised. So a lot of the stuff he was saying was just, you know, assurance. Mm. But he played a big role, man, and me just being successful, me watching the way he maneuvered through the facility, me coming on my visit and actually going to the facility, and I seen him in the hallways, and it was dark. And all I seen was the shadow. I said, damn, what is that? He was just walking, and he was just walking down the dang hall. I said, I can't let that tackle me. But, you know, to speed up the story, I would be on scout team with him, and he would, hey, son Bill, I need that rep. And I would pop, 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 and I would give it to him. I would give it to him literally and spin the ball at him and all of that type of stuff and record it on my phone and send it to my family and be like, I'm killing these guys. But to speed up, playing against DeMario in the league, played against him with the Saints. I was not as involved in the game plan, but this dude was playing hard as hell. He was playing so hard, man. 4-1. All right, dude, chill out. Chill out. But after the game, you know, he told me some good words and, you know, just keep going, folks, keep going, stay focused. And even when I got sent to Seattle that rookie year, he called me. He, you know, he gave me some of the best advice that I could ever have endured in the league. And that was, hey, listen, man, it's the NFL. There's 32 teams. He said that you work for the NFL and they have 32 different locations where you can end up being. And he said, don't get too hard on yourself about being released. He was like, this the business. You're like, hey, you got to go get their money. Who they got over there? You finna take some opposition, huh? And I was like, yeah, dog. And that was around Christmas time in Seattle. I got sent to Atlanta to Seattle on Christmas and nobody was up. I spent Christmas by myself in a hotel room. But yeah. That's a story about DeMario. But yeah, so I did get a chance to play against him, and he played super hard out there. And I was like, bro, you must not know me. You played me like a stranger.
All right. So before we get you out of here, tell us what you're up to now.
Man, I'm just taking it day by day, bro. Trying to get used to this new life. I ain't gonna lie. It's, you know, you're gonna have some of the greatest days, and you're gonna have some of the worst days. As far as just, you know, actually realizing that the game is over, you know, the game is over, and it was over because of neck injury. You know, that's tough. You know, like you said, I played 7 years and, you know, I went past the actual lifespan of an NFL player, NFL running back or whatever. But it's tough, man. It's tough. You know, you can hide behind a smile sometimes and I'm gonna be all right, you know, at the end of the day. But right now, man, you know, I try to mentor the kids who's up and coming. Speaking of the kids, I got a kid named Carmelo English. He was at Michigan University. Now he's at West Georgia. Hopefully, you know, he hate losing. They losing there, but he's shining like a light, you know, and I'm proud of him. And I would love for Arkansas State to take a look at this kid, because this is something that, you know, when we talk about them dogs, you know, if y'all been watching Phoenix City, Alabama, I ain't trying to say ever since I got put on, them kids been looking really good. You know, you got Justin Ross went to Clemson and went crazy. Markell went to Alabama. You got Cam Coleman that's at Auburn, the top receiver in the country. Who else we have? We got another kid that started at cornerback in Cincinnati. We got a lot more, dude. We got a lot more. We got a lot of kids that we put out there. So all I want to do is see people shine, see people get the most out of their life, see people happy. And also with me try to find happiness, because I've been playing ball since I was 8, you know, so now it's, and not saying that I ain't got nothing going, but you know, you got to find that love. You got to find that love for something else. And because football is over with.
Well, JD, we have really, really enjoyed catching up with you, and we cannot wait to see you next week for the Hall of Honor banquet.
And I heard I got to do a speech, man. So, you know, bear with me, dude. I don't like doing speeches.
We've been with you the last few minutes. You're going to be just fine.
Yeah, you'll be okay.
Appreciate y'all, man.
Hey, appreciate
you. Hey, shout out to Grid. Shout out to Rocky. Shout out to all of my teammates. Shout out to Freddie Knighton. Shout out to Ryan Applin. Shout out to my whole O-line, Trez Houston. Shout out to everybody. I love y'all. I wish I could say everybody's name, but hey, we had some dogs. So I appreciate all them dudes for sure, because this shit wouldn't be happening if it wasn't for none of them dudes. Chris Humes, Xavier Woodson, Javon Roland Jones. I want to say everybody's name. Mike Gordon, a guy that I feel like could have been in the NFL easily. A lot of dudes that, you know, that went to A-State that deserve a lot of credit that may not ever get it. But, you know, if I could give them the credit, you know, I will do that. You know, Trocine, Chris Stone, one of the best athletes I ever seen.
Q Lee. All of them.
Tim.
Starson.
Big Nate. Yeah. Everybody, dude. Everybody was some beasts. Push up.
That's J.D. McKissic joining us here on the Second to None podcast. We'll have more for you right after this.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolf fans, this is DeMario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
And we welcome you back into the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Football team was in San Marcos over the weekend, taking on Texas State, the Bobcats, the preseason pick in the Sun Belt Conference. Thought it might be an emotional game. I didn't know it was going to be emotional as soon as it was, which is saying that it got emotional as soon as the Red Wolves walked into the stadium.
Yeah, let me hear about it.
All right, so you've been around forever and have seen a million games on the road. You know the tradition, and it's not just Coach Jones. It's any team that we've ever had. So you walk out onto the field as soon as you get there, usually right at 2 hours before kickoff. And our guys are walking, and they gather around the 50-yard line, usually around the logo. They hold hands and they pray. Well, they were going about that same routine they always do. And there were probably about 20, 25 Texas State players. I didn't see any coaches on the field that came up and started talking. It started a little bit of a back and forth. Anyway, it did get a little emotional. So you could tell, I mean, they were going back and forth for a little while. I didn't see anybody pushing anybody. It was just a lot of talk.
You know, it got heated.
It got heated.
Well, then I assume then how many of those Texas State guys caught a cramp?
Well, you're not going to believe it, but I didn't see anybody go down. I think they were probably really dehydrated, though, after that.
That's what did it, huh? That makes more sense now.
Let's come back to the dehydration thing. But it was an emotional game. Look, we knew if Texas State was going to circle any game on the schedule, this was going to be it. Because we know what happened last year in Jonesboro when the Red Wolves just beat down the Bobcats on senior day, 77-31. And I know that G.J. Kinney has reminded his team about that many, many times, not only the week leading up to the game, but probably many times throughout the course of the offseason.
Right.
And that was a team that won 8 games last year, won a bowl game, and had all kinds of expectations on them this year. They're really, really good. They've got a phenomenal quarterback in Jordan McLeod. He was great. But we got off to a really good start. First play from scrimmage, Jaquez Cross goes for 49 yards. It was good to see him get involved the other day. He definitely had his best game of the season. 9 carries for a season high 117 yards. He had 175 all-purpose yards. But, you know, we were hanging around in the first half, even though we were settling for field goals. It was 17-9, Texas State at halftime. So you're still feeling good. You're within one score.
That's right.
But I thought the first 7 minutes of the third quarter, that was the story. They score really quickly on their first drive. And then we're driving right back, have a really nice first drive there in the third quarter, and a fumble inside the red zone. They pick it up, and 3 plays later, they're in the end zone. So instead of us getting back to within a score, they're up 3 scores, and we just couldn't overcome
that. Did they
that.
Call that, by the way, was that – was the terminology on the fumble after the review, was it the call was confirmed or the call stands?
Call stands.
So they just couldn't find an angle to overturn it.
And everything we saw from the video board, and we had a monitor in our booth as well, so we were seeing everything, I guess it was coming across on the ESPN Plus broadcast. I never saw an angle from the other side. It was all from the same angle.
Yeah.
There was never any proof, it seemed, that the ball came out before Devin Spencer hit the turf.
But that was the call.
And I guess they didn't have enough to overturn it.
And I guess if you're listening to this, you probably understand that. It's like the end result, it doesn't matter. But technically, it officially matters a little bit whether they say the call is confirmed or the call stands. Because the call stands means it might not be right, but we didn't see anything to turn it over. So then it kind of goes back to, well, what'd they call it on the field?
Yeah.
And so that's why I wanted to know what, because I was at a spot where I was seeing the game but not hearing it when that happened.
That's what kind of caught my attention, because everything that we saw, there was nothing that proved that ball came out before he hit the turf, but there was nothing we saw to prove he didn't.
Yeah. So. I knew that was the angles I was seeing. So, yeah. And here's the deal. Like, I guess we'll never know at this point, and maybe it doesn't matter. But I also feel like, I'll say this, in terms of letting it play out, the officials did it right. Right? You let the play unfold, because it'd be worse if it was a fumble and they'd blown a whistle and called him down. Because then you can't go look at, you know, it's not as easy to go look at. So, I mean, to just let the play happen and then try to go sort it out and replay is the right way to go about it. It's just, I was interested to see whether they thought they had themselves a definitive angle and replay or not. Doesn't sound like they did.
So the Red Wolves fall to 3-3 overall. They're 1-1 in conference play at the halfway point. And they still got everything in front of them. Still half a season to go.
Yep.
And when you look at the schedule, you knew coming in the first half of the schedule was going to be the most difficult part. But you got to take care of business the rest of the way. And that starts this Saturday at Southern Miss. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, but I do want to get back to the faking injuries, because there was actually a segment on College Game Day about...
This was a sort of a national talking point last week.
Did you see the segment?
I didn't see it on Game Day, but I know that, look, I'm not calling you out here. Like, Ole Miss has come under fire.
It's happening, and it's a strategy that teams are implementing. It's annoying to watch, because I don't even think the home fans want to see it. I mean, it slows down the pace of the game when every time you turn around, there's athletic trainers coming out. Now, look, you don't want to say too much about it on the air because the guy actually may be hurt. Yeah. But that's not what was happening the other night. Not everybody was out there cramping up. And there was one point, and Coach and I were talking about it while we were recording the TV show. I think we had just got through recording. And he said he was actually standing over by one of the players after they went down, and he told the official, this one may actually be hurt. The guy stood up right after that. He tried to start limping a little bit. And then he turns around and laughs and runs back to the other sideline. Hmm. So that's what's going on. It was clearly a strategy because anytime we picked up a big first down or a big play, there was something, somebody going down. Look, Texas State's, as you mentioned, they're not the only guilty party here. And it's something, and we'll talk about game day. Kirk Herbstreit said that they've got to do something, and it's a point of emphasis going into the offseason. Something has to be done to address this going forward.
Yeah, and I think it will be because, again, it's a national storyline, and it was last week. So it's on the front of people's minds, so it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. I'm sure that will land right on the desk of Steve Shaw, who we've got the chance to visit with several times and think an awful lot of. He's the national director of officials now, so I'm sure the officials and the coaches will talk about it in the offseason, see what do you do to address that and dissuade it.
In the meantime, do you see more teams start to do it now? Because if there's a momentum killer for an offense, that's it. I mean, you've got to sit there for a couple of minutes after a big play and wait for the player to get back up.
You could use Arkansas State for an example and a lot of other teams, right? The times we go fastest is off a big play or off a first down. That's the time we're going to go with the quickest tempo. And so for the rest of this season, I don't know why you wouldn't put it in, because I don't know that it can get addressed between now and then. So, I've seen teams ride that play all the way to a conference championship before.
We have seen that before, haven't we?
We have indeed.
Yeah, not a good memory. We're going to move on. We'll be back to wrap things up here on the Second to None podcast right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours. Welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Brian Hodson, and I'm asking you to help our A-State student-athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our student-athletes by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Men's basketball, to the shock of nobody, picked to win the Sun Belt Conference in the preseason poll that came out on Monday morning. Red Wolves picked first in the league, and Kobe Julian, who was on this podcast just a couple of weeks ago, named the preseason Sun Belt Player of the Year, first team all-league selection as well, of course, and had a couple of other all-conference selections. Taryn Todd to the second team, and Isaiah Nelson to the third team. Something tells me that Zay, especially, is not going to end up on the postseason third team.
Are we to the bottom yet of didn't this come up the other day with Kobe, or were we talking about after the fact? Can he win newcomer of the year?
He's not a newcomer to the
no,
league.
He's not.
I like what Coach Hodson immediately put on social media. He gave the rat poison reference.
Oh boy.
So he did spend some time with Coach Saban and Alabama.
First time A-State's been picked as a preseason top choice in conference play.
Going to be a fun year. Can't wait for it to get started.
Inside,
just a couple of weeks away.
Yeah. As you listen to this, inside 3 weeks. And by the way, Akron was picked to win the MAC.
Oh, wow. What a matchup on opening night. Two conference favorites, November 4th.
Yeah. I hope you're planning accordingly. If you're listening to this, wherever you need to plan on being in Jonesboro, November 4th. Yeah, because two teams each picked to win their league, each, you know, 20 plus wins a year ago. It is a big time matchup on the first day of the season.
Women's golf, as we're recording this, currently hosting the Lady Red Wolves Classic over at Sage Meadows. Good luck to Coach MJ Debian Shaw and her squad. How about the volleyball team?
Yeah.
Just another dominant weekend. They swept both of their matches against ULM. And they're now 15-3 overall, 5-1 in conference play, a perfect 7-0 at home.
Yep.
And that 5-1 conference mark has them all alone at the moment in first place in the Sun Belt's Western Division. There's a three-way tie for second, and one of those three teams is Texas State. Red Wolves will be in San Marcos taking on Texas State Friday at 6 and Saturday at 1. So that should be a heck of a matchup this weekend.
And they're a little hot. I mean, they're a little salty about not being 6-0 in the league. You know, obviously, you've got some stuff happening in the conference schedule because some teams with Hurricane Helene, it messed with some schedules. You got some teams that hadn't played all their matches, and there's been a lot of back and forth on how to address that. But another good weekend, back-to-back sweeps. Even though Friday was a competitive match, shook off a slow start to get the first set, and then kind of had to hold off a big run from ULM in the third set. It went extra points to complete that sweep. And then I think kind of not as tight probably on Saturday, but yeah, got home again and took care of business. And then you mentioned the big matchup against Texas State, which they consider to be one of the top teams in the league. I mean, I know our staff does. And then back home for a huge weekend next weekend.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about it next week, but they're home Thursday and Friday leading into that full weekend of activity.
Soccer team played a couple of matches this past week. They fell at ULM on Thursday, 2-0. Then they hosted Southern Miss on Sunday. That game was back and forth, ended up finishing in a 2-2 tie. Keelan Peacock and Emma Riley with goals. Soccer now 3-4-4 on the season. They'll host the Cajuns coming up Thursday at 3, and then they've got that makeup match at Appalachian State coming up Sunday at 11 a.m.
Yeah, and I think maybe that was even that game with the Cajuns altered a little bit, kind of as they had to shuffle some stuff around because of, again, Helene, and scheduled to go out to App, you know, right after that. And obviously things were in disarray there, but I don't know what to say. More competitive matches, which is what this team seems to play every day.
The number 2-ranked bowling team opened up their season this past weekend. They were at the Penguin Classic in Struthers, Ohio. They went 10-3 for the weekend, finished 4th in the event. They'll be right back in action this weekend. They'll be in Orlando at the Destination Tournament. That's the name of it, the Destination Tournament.
Literally and figuratively. You know, and honestly, you know, this time a week ago, you know, our staff was sitting there saying, hey, we know we're supposed to go down there, but we don't know what's going to happen because of Milton. Like, they were taking a big-time wait-and-see approach, depending on, you know, how severe that hurricane was there going through Tampa and that part of Florida. But looks like everything is on schedule for them to get down there this week.
A-State Tennis wrapping up play at the ITA Central Regional Championships in Memphis this past weekend. They finished the tournament with 17 victories, 13 singles, 4 doubles wins, 6 of those victories over power conference opponents. I know Sujay Lama was happy with the performance in Memphis, and they'll be back home to host the Scarlet and Black Open as part of that big weekend you were referencing. That'll be next weekend, the 25th through the 27th, at the A-State Tennis Complex.
Yep, some tennis next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. A couple of those power conference wins were in-state power conference wins for A-State tennis players last week.
Meanwhile, cross-country getting some recognition this past week. Jacob Pyatt named the Sun Belt Conference Men's Runner of the Week. We had talked about his performance last week in Louisville, finishing 2nd out of 279 runners in that event, topped his career best by more than 20 seconds. Cross-country teams with their final tune-up before the conference championships. They'll be in College Station this weekend at the Arturo Barrios Invitational. And that leads us to football. Red Wolves trying to get back in the win column, looking for their first road win of the season coming up on Saturday at Southern Miss. Southern Miss, with their backs against the wall for sure, they're off to a rough start. They're 1-5 on the year. They're 0-2 in the league, and this is their homecoming. They know if they're going to get back on track, they're going to have to start this weekend. But we've been waiting for that breakout performance for the A-State offense. Hopefully, this is the weekend because, look, they've been moving the ball, and they have the last couple of games. South Alabama game, they moved the ball up and down the field. They moved the ball well, actually had a season high in rushing yards this past week at Texas State. Just got to start finding the end zone. Nobody knows it more than this team does, and hopefully they're finally able to do that this weekend.
They understand that when you kick a field goal, like your sideline, I guess, is technically happy. You scored 3 points, but the other sideline's happy too because they just saved four.
Yeah.
You might have scored three, but they saved four. So a lot of times they're going to feel like they came out ahead in that deal. You know, a lot of coaches say what they want their defense to do is make the other team kick the ball, whether that's punting or try a field goal. So it's not lost on this team. And again, you know the pieces are there. There's going to come a day where they come out and it clicks on offense. And yeah, it'd be great for it to be Saturday because this is an important game, you know, for both teams. Even if it's for different reasons, it's an important game for both teams.
Kickoff at 6 in Hattiesburg. Our coverage begins at 4 on the radio side. You can also see that game on ESPN+. I do want to thank J.D. McKissick for joining us. Always appreciate you listening. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.